Hello, I'm Lori Watanabe, the editor of Mobility Management Magazine and your host for this Mobility Management podcast. Today I'm joined by Karen Roy from NewMotion, who was a recommendation from Leanne Hoffman, so thank you to Leanne. You can read and follow Karen's disability-related blogs on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter. Her handle is @LifePossibleKR. Karen, welcome to the podcast, and thanks for being with us.
Oh, hello. Thank you so much for having me. I'm super excited.
I have some wide-ranging questions I'd like to ask you, but we will eventually get to the potentially long-lasting effects that the pandemic might have on people who have disabilities. I wanted to take advantage of having you here, though. I know you already have a lot of fans in the complex rehab industry, but just to give a little background for those who might not know you, you're a licensed clinical social worker. You currently work for NewMotion, and you've been a territory manager there, but now you're a full-time ambassador for NewMotion, which I think is largely an educational position. What's your career evolution been like, and why have you taken on new roles?
Well, I knew at the beginning of my college career, shortly after becoming paralyzed, I was shot in an armed robbery when I was a sophomore at LSU, that I wanted to help in some way other people that were going through similar experiences. So I chose a master's degree in social work after that. I started off working with people who had severe mental illnesses, and then shortly thereafter switched to working in a hospital setting on a lot of different units. So in the ICUs and pulmonary unit, cardiac unit, eventually settling in on a rehab unit where I discovered that my disability gave me a great advantages in helping other people. Just, I think, setting an example of the fact that someone who uses a wheelchair can have a professional career. And I did that for a really long time. After about 20 years off and on of being a social worker in a hospital setting, I worked with a lot of ATPs when I was trying to help get complex rehab for the people that I was working with. I believe I was at a conference and I ran into Mike Callahan, who's now our VP for NewMotion, and he asked if I'd be interested in sales. And I said, what time would you like me there? At that point, I had done social work for a really long time, but I thought, you know, taking on a new role would be fun and exciting, and I could still use my social work degree in some way. So I started off in sales as a territory manager in complex rehab. I did a year of medical supply sales and then became the brand ambassador about a year and a half ago. And so I write disability-related blogs, and then I do a lot of government relations work and just interacting with customers in general.
So you use a wheelchair full-time. What impact do you think that has had on the people that you meet with and work with, from patients and clients to their family members, caregivers, people who don't have disabilities but maybe have never known someone who's been in a wheelchair full-time? What impact do you think you have on people in that respect?
I hope I can show people how fabulous life can be as a wheelchair user. As a 19-year-old becoming paralyzed, I still had my whole life ahead of me. I wanted to be a wife and a mother, and I wanted to have an amazing, meaningful career. And I did just that. I had 3 children after I worked. I had a house full of kids and animals. And I think even in a professional setting, whether I'm like with room mother or at the grocery store, I'm typically smiling and super happy. And I think, you know, hopefully that kind of changes some of the negative stereotype that people have of someone with a disability, which is that our lives are, you know, terrible and not fun. And I think it is what you make of it. And hopefully I can display that for other people.
I suspect that whether you are in a professional role or not, I kind of think that you're probably always being an educator and that you're always sort of a role model, even when you are not in that professional educator mode. Because I think that every time someone sees you in the community, you're potentially changing what that person thinks about people who use wheelchairs. Do you think that's true?
I do. It's funny that you say that. I think about my days in the hospital and as a social worker, I would roll into the gym, you know, to talk to a therapist or find a patient. And patients would stop me and ask, like, oh, what room are you in? And I was like, well, I'm not a patient. I work here. And they're like, what do you mean you work? And I was like, yeah, I work. You know, after I got up at 5 a.m. and dressed my kids and fed them breakfast, dropped them off at school. And they're like, well, how did you get here? And I'm like, you drove here with hand controls. And, you know, so whether or not it was at work or in the mall, or I think, you know, even though it's 2020, there's still a lot of misconception about how a person with a mobility impairment lives their life. We're married, that we have babies, that we have meaningful careers, and just in general that we're like lead active and happy lives. So, and I think, you know, getting out of the car at the grocery store, like it still happens that people are like, do you need help? And most of the time I politely say no, you know, I got this. I hope that's what I do.
Well, I'd like to transition now to some more current events, namely the COVID-19 pandemic. I wanted to ask about topics that I've seen being discussed on social media. People with disabilities have been talking about how suddenly, for instance, schools across the country have been able to offer online classes to hundreds of thousands of students, even though students with disabilities have sometimes been told in the past that online learning just isn't feasible. And suddenly, some restaurants have made their seating areas much more accessible by moving tables farther apart so that they can socially distance, or they've moved some tables outside where there's a lot more room to maneuver. So have you been hearing any conversations, or have you had conversations about how the COVID-19 pandemic has made the world maybe more willing to adapt and adjust?
Yeah, it's amazing how things can happen, you know, and it affects the masses. You know, having online options for both school and work is amazing. Improved, you know, restaurant seating and being able to move around in restaurants, especially for someone in a power chair and or even in a manual chair, it makes things much easier for us. One thing that I've noticed, though, is that with all of the emphasis on making sure that everyone is washing their hands continuously as much as possible, even though a bathroom may be set up and they think it's meeting ADA requirements, a lot of times I can't reach the towels, I can't reach the soap dispensers. And so I hope that all businesses and restaurants take all of these things into consideration for people with disabilities. So there's some things have improved, and there's probably some things that we're going to still have to fight for to make sure that we can go out in public and safely, socially distance and staying safe.
Well, I know you've mentioned to me that it's important that people with disabilities still can be seen in public. I mean, you've said it's
yeah.
so important that people see us in public because that's kind of how they learn. That's sort of their educational role model. Do you think that the educational process really starts out that simply, that maybe just seeing you in the community, whether you're busy being a mom, whether you're working, you're traveling, that's really important? And for instance, you've been Ms. Wheelchair America. That's one of your titles. Are you an educator just every time you are seen in public?
I think it's really, really important that we stay visible. So while online learning and being able to work from home are huge for people with disabilities, so some people that have a lack of transportation and couldn't be employed or couldn't go to school because they, you know, didn't have a way to get there, that's great. But on the flip side, I think it's really important that as soon as it's safe, that people with disabilities continue to stay visible in our communities. I've always, you know, worked and been out there, been a room mom, traveled the world, and I think we can break a lot of negative stereotypes by just participating in our everyday activities. So, you know, I try to answer questions with a smile. People don't always ask them in the most politically correct way. And you know, I think that you take that and you use it as an educational opportunity. And, you know, maybe next time they learn to ask questions, you know, in a more respectful way. But I don't like to be really negative because I think encouraging questions and being able to use that as a teaching moment is a good thing. And I did have the privilege of being Miss Wheelchair Louisiana 2018 and then Miss Wheelchair America 2019. And it's not a beauty competition. It's the winners of Miss Wheelchair America are chosen due to their history of advocacy and then their ability to articulate their platform. So it's completely an advocacy-based competition. So I competed against some amazing women across the country and had the privilege of winning, and then traveled that year. I was Miss Ultra America 2019. So I was in 25 states, 43 cities, and I think I did 80-something speaking appearances. When you're carrying a crown, you get a lot of attention, even if it's on your lap and not on your head. So, you know, I used every time I had a chance, whether it was to go to a local news station or speak at a local community event or talk to somebody in an airport, I used that opportunity to explain my platform. And for me, when I was first shot and I was in rehab, I found out about standing technologies that existed even back in 1987 and functional electrical stimulation bicycles that I've used. Those are the technologies that have kept me healthy over the last 32 years. And payers are not always wanting to cover those items. They think that they are not medically necessary, although especially the standing devices and seat elevation help people to do activities of daily living, kitchen things, cooking, using the bathroom, brushing your teeth. There's a lot of both physical benefits and then, of course, psychological benefits to being in a standing position. So my whole platform was trying to get coverage for the technologies that I think keep people with disabilities healthy.
Okay, now I wanted to talk about people with disabilities and healthcare rights, because that's been something very, very much in the news these days. As hospitals started reaching capacity due to surges of COVID-19 patients, I heard some healthcare facility managers begin talking about possibly needing to triage patients, basically to determine who would have first access to ventilators, medications, hospital beds, healthcare from physicians and nurses. And there was some discussion about quality of life being one of those factors that would be considered if they had to triage patients. People with disabilities are having to argue that their lives are just as valuable as the lives of people who don't have disabilities. That's what I've been seeing online. Mm-hmm. Have you heard discussions like that?
I have. The biases against people with disabilities have been exposed during this pandemic again. And, you know, I believe that healthcare, ventilators, and access to any medications has to be first come, first serve. It's insane to me that a physician and then the councils that they put together in the hospitals to make these decisions about who's going to live and who's going to die are made by people that think that a person who has a disability, that their life is somehow less valuable than an able-bodied person. And, you know, I beg to differ about that. I think that at times people with disability, maybe our lives are worth more. Like who is to say that because someone can ambulate versus someone who's not able to ambulate, that their life is more valuable or that they're going to live longer? Right now, you know, our life expectancies continue to increase and are almost the same as an able-bodied person. So to think that a team of people can sit in judgment of that and then not have persons with disabilities in on that conversation is completely unfair and illegal, quite honestly. But it infuriates me. So I think, you know, we have to continue to advocate for ourselves and make sure that we have a seat at the table when it comes to those decisions being made.
Well, and I guess that goes back to people seeing you in the community, right? Because a lot of times I think they're probably just learning without even knowing that they're learning. They see you at the grocery store. They see you dropping your kids off at school. They see you in an airport getting onto an airplane. And as you said, they just see you in the parking lot getting out of your car. And maybe all those little incidents put together start to teach them that your quality of life, the quality of life for any person, can't just be a stereotype, right? We can't just assume that just because you use a wheelchair, all people who use wheelchairs are the same.
No, I mean, we're doctors and lawyers. There's a nurse in New York now that, you know, couldn't get a job before because she was in a wheelchair, you know, due to the pandemic, is now working in hospitals in New York and saving people's lives with COVID. You know, we're professionals, we're parents, we're sisters and brothers and daughters and sons, and we play a key role in society. So yeah, you know, that's something that we've always fought for, because there was a day when having a disability or you were born with any kind of diagnosis that made you different, then you should be like hidden away somewhere, you know, and those biases still exist. Yeah. So, you know, I'm a people person. I'm a social worker for a reason, and I'm probably a brand ambassador for a reason. I love people. I love being out and being seen. And, you know, right now it might not be safe, but as soon as it is, I think, you know, it's really important for us to continue to roll back those stereotypes and to have a seat at the table and to be visible, to be in senior management of corporations, and, you know, just living, as I say all the time in the blogs, you know, living our best life possible. It's been 30 years with the ADA this month, and we've made a lot of progress, but, you know, we still have a long way to go. And, you know, I think that there's going to be one of the silver linings of the pandemic is the opportunity to work from home. But, you know, there's, like I said, I think there's kind of two sides to that. So I'm ready to get out there again, to be quite honest.
Well, yeah, my last question is about what positives we might be able to take from this pandemic eventually. We've seen that accessibility can be improved, that online learning is possible if people want to make it happen. But we've also seen that people with disabilities have literally had to justify their existence, because otherwise they might be put at the bottom of the triage list by people who just assume that they don't have a good quality of life. And you've mentioned that, for instance, being able to telecommute, work from home, is a positive. But on the flip side, we do need people with disabilities to be seen in the community, just so that people without disabilities can learn about their quality of life and what they can contribute. So do you think that there are any positives that we might be able to take away from this pandemic?
Yeah, I think another thing that's kind of come up in the disabled community is that so many people with disabilities live sort of an isolated life. Like, we have all had to quarantine at home and be in our houses and away from the people that we love. You know, a lot of time people with disabilities, due to a lack of care or caregivers or transportation, live really isolated lives. So I think that maybe society as a whole will have more empathy for people with disabilities who are living in isolation. And, you know, once we can all get out again, they remember the psychological damage that can cause. And we do a better job of providing transportation and opportunities for people who are living isolated due to their disability to get out and be among people. So I hope that a lot of people take away from this, like, a new understanding of isolation and the damage it can cause, and remember that we've been doing this for many, many, many years. And, you know, don't forget about us when things go back to normal.
Well, thanks so much, Karen, for sharing those experiences and your thoughts on how the pandemic could impact the lives of people with disabilities. I think it's a great point that everyone who is at home going a little bit stir crazy because they can't get out as much as they're used to, for a long time, that's been what the environment, what communities have basically done to people with disabilities, right? Basically made them homebound when they don't really need to be. It's just a transportation and an accessibility issue. So thank you so much for your thoughts on how the pandemic can ultimately affect the lives and experiences of people with disabilities. And with that, we'll be wrapping up this podcast. And if you're not already reading Karen's blog posts, you can check her out at LifePossibleKR on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. They're a great read, and I highly recommend checking them out. And speaking of great conversations, stay tuned right after the music for a special behind-the-scenes bonus question outtake with Karen Roy. Mobility Management podcasts are available for listening and downloading on iTunes, Google Play, and Stitcher. The best way to make sure you don't miss any of our podcasts is to subscribe, and you can also go onto our website, mobilitymgmt.com, to listen there. Thank you very much for listening, and we'll be back again soon. Hey again, it's Lori Watanabe, host of Mobility Management Podcasting. After our official podcast wrapped, Karen Roy and I continued to talk. Karen is gracious with anyone who asks questions about her and her wheelchair, even when those questions aren't always kind or polite. But Karen especially encourages questions from children and treats those conversations with extra care. I asked her how she responds to questions that have become part of her everyday life, and here's what Karen had to say about that in a Mobility Management Podcast outtake. Do you feel like it's different when it's a kid asking?
I don't ever want kids to not ask questions. I would prefer if parents, like, didn't stop them from asking either. I don't usually say, like, yeah, I got shot in the back. I'm like, well, you know, my back got, I got hurt, and you know, so my legs don't work anymore, so this is my chair, but this is, like, a good thing. And, I mean, of course, they think anything with wheels on it is cool, right?
Right.
I mean,
right.
My niece is 11, and she's been here a lot lately, and she didn't know for the longest time. Apparently, she was like, oh, so she can't walk. I just thought she didn't want to. Who wouldn't want to just roll around? And she did say to me the other day, can you roll over here? And she was very aware of the fact that she said, roll over here. And I was like, sure. And she's like, you know, it's pretty cool that you use a wheelchair. And I think both my daughter and my older niece, like, at some point in their lives, were like, when I grow up, I want one of those kind of thing. But I think you're formulating. I don't think you want to give the impression to children that somebody with a disability is angry and mean.
Right.
That's the last thing I want them to think. So, and I mean, I am a teacher, I think, at heart, so, and I'm a mom. And it's funny, like, I'd rather you ask the question than just stare at me.
Right. But see, you're going about it the nice way. I think my attitude would be, no, let your kid ask, because I want your kid to not be as dumb as you are when you're
right.
You know, and you'd be next to me going, that is not how we phrase that.
Right.
Your niece, maybe your daughter, were like, man, if I'm really good and I study hard in school, and I get good grades and I save up my allowance, I could get a wheelchair one day.
Right, right. Yeah,
if I play my cards right. You know,
yeah.
I could have a cool wheelchair like that.
I told her, and I was like, baby, no, you don't want one. Yes, I do. Yes, I do. You don't know what I want. I do want one of those. I was like, okay, well, talk about it later.